Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we're going to talk to Nate Hapke. Now, I'm going to give you a major disclaimer here, which is this was Nate's second interview because due to a catastrophic hard drive failure and my keeping podcast files in a personal folder that wasn't backed up instead of the work folder that is backed up in the cloud, let's just say a big thank you to Nate Hapke for coming back and recording the interview again. The reason that's a disclaimer is because Nate and I had already talked for a few hours about his life and his past and how he became a filmmaker. So I think a lot of that kind of got skipped over this time. Again, that's my bad for not backing everything up. Still, if you're listening to this, you'd probably watch his film One More and then listen to the interview. Even though we don't focus on One More too much, One More is a wonderful film he made that was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2017. That he's gone all around the world with to film festivals, and it's going to be online same day that this podcast is online. Okay, without further ado, let's talk to Nate.
From a very young age, I'm the youngest of three kids, and so there's that inherent youngest child syndrome where it's like, I need to figure out a way to elicit attention, so I'm going to...
We are the entertainers.
There you go, see? Yeah. We need to elicit a smile. We need to elicit something along those lines, and... you know, I got into performing and I got into voices and I got into, I come from a family of cinephiles. And so it's growing up, there was always another movie on, or there was always a television series. And my family, they would watch television series, not like, you know, a throwaway thing. It wasn't like a, you know, cause it was cool. They would watch it from the beginning to end as like a full story arc and that kind of thing. So it was an emphasis on appreciating story and how characters grow and all that kind of stuff. We would go to the movies. There was always like a birthday parties were spent at the movies. You know, we would get our friends together, and I have all these nice memories. Actually, so it's older brother, then sisters in the middle, and then it's me down there. And I have these great memories of, going to these birthday parties as a kid at the movies, and I would pick, you know, I one of them was Space Jam. That's the one that I'm thinking about right now, and it's a wonderful movie, one of my childhood favorites. And I just have this great memory of my brother being there as one of the chaperones. You know, my dad, I think organized that one, and it was just great. I mean, it was just an emphasis on appreciating the movie going experience.
Yeah, and within your family unit, film was highly regarded.
It was very highly regarded. And it was also, it was like, it was appreciating film. It was watching it. It was, I mean, you get my siblings together and it's amazing because it's just, actually my siblings and my parents as well, it's just quoting movies. Like that we can have entire dialogues back and forth that are just movie quotes. We're that kind of way. Observational humor was something that my siblings and I, we sort of got from my father, and so it was, and puns as well, and so it was like that all tying into movie quotes and stuff like that. It just worked very well.
And so these age, so this is like this is elementary school era.
This is elementary school, middle school, still into high school.
Because you did get the acting bug first.
I did get the acting bug because it was performance. It was loving to make my older siblings laugh. It was loving to make my mother laugh. My mother went through some very tough times, and so there was, without going into specifics, there was this, you know, feeling of wanting to make her smile, and yeah, wanting to make her happy, and...
That's Stephen Colbert's story.
Yeah.
You heard his story, yeah.
Yeah, no, and Jim Carrey's story as well. And so there was part of me that just wanted to perform because I realized the value that it had in it for my family. And I was like, maybe I can do this for other people. And I told that to both my parents, and my dad was really the first one to get me to go to, you know, summer theater and to go to pursue, you know, acting in school. Yeah. And there was a kid, one of these, I was in a few plays, back in Connecticut. I grew up in Connecticut. And so it was like, it was theater in the park in Cranberry Park. And there was some theater in high school. And there was a kid there that was talking about this program. And this program that led to a competition in New York City. And there could be agents and all that kind of stuff. And I told my mom about that. And my mom was like, let's go check it out. And we did check it out. And my mom drove me to those classes, and then we went to the competition, and I had 7 callbacks from agents, and one was, you know, actually very interested in meeting with me and, like, needed to see me before the competition was over, and we signed with her. And that was the summer of 2003.
And you were how old?
Then I was 13, because I would be turning 14 mm-hmm. in that November. And that led to a bunch of auditions that were all in New York City that my mom drove me down to. So there was Rocket Science, the HBO film, Superbad. I auditioned at Judd Apatow's office in New York City. And the one at a bunch of commercials, the one that I did actually get, the only one that I got, was actually one that would later be very rewarding. It was a Columbia University short film. I can't remember if it was a thesis film for them, that was written by both Louis LaPat and... Oh, there you go. Okay, so it was written by Louis LaPat and Ashley Lyle. Directed by Ashley and then produced by both of them. So they were both there, and essentially I was a heavier set kid. My agent actually was saying that she wanted to send me out as the next Josh Peck, because I was like the funny fat kid, essentially. And I actually love that comparison because I grew up a huge fan of Josh Peck's. And quick, you know, funny story is that we both lost weight around the same time as well. So it was like, I actually really want Josh Peck, if you're listening, I want you to play this role in my film Guests, these two brothers, Hayden and Corey Bates, the names of actually childhood friends of mine, who are this young... passionate, overly cocky writer-directors who are figuring out this niche in movies of the week that the main character actually goes into audition for, and I would like to play one of the brothers, and I'd like Josh Peck to play the other brother.
Nice.
Because that would be a childhood dream unlocked, achieved, and I actually think that he and I would play that very well. Back to what the role was. So it was this funny fat kid that was being... It was a summer camp story. It's called Enter the Jonas, and the character was Jonas, and the title was a riff on Enter the Dragon, because the character watches Enter the Dragon. absolutely. For those out there that didn't get that reference, the story point is that he's away at summer camp, and he's the fat kid, and there are bullies, and he ends up training with one of the camp counselors, and the camp counselor gives him Enter the Dragon, and he watches it. And he thinks, oh, I need to fight the kids. It ends up being a false idea of how he needs to handle his bullies, as opposed to just, like, standing up and embracing the fact that he is who he is, and eventually he's going to change, and he's going to grow up, and he's going to be interesting, and he's going to have developed a personality because he had to in order to have friends, and all that kind of stuff. There's this amazing final monologue in it that I nailed. I nailed it. But anyway, in the audition, I'll never forget that feeling. And I've actually I wrote it into my film Slate, and I wrote it originally into the original version of Guests. But I since took it out because I didn't think that it worked in there. But it does exist in Slate, where the actor walks into the waiting room and they see 6 people that look just like them.
Yeah.
And, like, what that feels like. Because you go in there and you're like, I have this idea about myself, and I think I'm unique, and I think, you know, whatever else. But then you walk in and it's just a freaking cattle call. You know, it's like you're not unique, and you your actual ability needs to speak for itself as opposed to your visual appearance. So I'll never forget that. And that comes from me walking into that hallway and seeing 6 fat kids that looked very similar to me with the curly hair and, the Jufro and just like, you know, feeling like, oh, wow, I guess I really do need to, you know, show up because I, you know, what makes me different than these kids? And it was like a weird psychological thing because it can psych you out or it can motivate you. And thankfully for me, it motivated me. I walked into the room and the actor who ended up playing the camp counselor, Al Thompson, very talented actor. He was coming off of A Walk to Remember and Love Don't Cost a Thing. And he was in The Royal Tenenbaums. He actually played Danny Glover's son in that movie. So he had a bunch of clout back then. And I was in awe of him just being in the audition with him. And we had a great rapport. And I was cast that day, and they actually, there were still kids in the waiting room that they had go away.
Really? So they didn't even call you later that day. They did it on the spot.
They did it on the spot. And it was so, I made Al. I
mean, chemistry's unmistakable.
It was amazing. Yeah. And it just, something worked. And Al and I had a great time. It was, we shot on location in Staten Island. My mom drove me to and from, while her mother was sick, to and from Connecticut. So it was a 2.5 hour drive each way. Each day for 4 days.
Really, they couldn't put you up. It was
super. They put us up for 2 nights. I think 2 nights because we were on the campgrounds. But then the rest of it was just like driving back and forth. And to my mother's credit, she did it. She just wanted me to do what I was doing. To this day, she's still like that, which is quite unique. And I'll get back to that eventually as I got to, you know, because my growing up, my lucky number was also 8. And so there was something that I needed to do once I got to my 8th short film. So we'll get there. But that's like a little tease.
Sure.
So we made this movie, and when we wrapped, I'll never forget, it was like a couple months later, there was this premiere at a bar in New York City. So my mom and I drive down. She pays for parking at some garage. We go to this bar, and I'll never forget, we watch the movie, and, like, the compliments that I got afterwards, I just felt like, wow, I did it. You know, like, I did it. And I'll never forget what Al said that night to me in person. He's like, hey, man, we need to work together again one day. And I said, okay. This was summer of 2003.
It's not that long ago, if you think about it.
No, it's not. It's not. But Al and I never saw each other again until the summer of 2014, which is another tease that I'll get back to. I went through some personal struggles. I had to leave school for a while. But thankfully, I got back to that. Just took some time off. It was about 2.5 years that I was out of school, in my late teens, and it sort of derailed my acting career from there. But I still had a passion for it. During that time and even before, I had a lot of feelings always. I was described as very sensitive, which was a term that was thrown around and could have been derogatory, but I chose to embrace it. What I would do with those feelings is I would write them into either short stories or like poems or something along those lines. And so I was always creating in some way. And then I always loved watching SportsCenter as well. Huge basketball and football fan. So SportsCenter highlights were wonderful. And then when it came time for college, I was like, I could go to Syracuse because it's close. So I grew up in Connecticut. I finished high school in Binghamton, New York. My mom got a job up there. 2015 was voted the most boring city in America. just FYI. But Binghamton, New York. But thankfully I had, a nice group of friends in high school who really helped with my transition coming in as an 18-year-old sophomore in high school. A wonderful testament to them for making me feel supported, and because it's high school's hard enough when you're the age. But when you're a little bit older and there's these preconceived notions that you might be slow or something along those lines, that was a tough time for me, but I made it through because I was on the bowling team and all that kind of stuff. The senior year of high school, there was an elective that I could take, which was journalism. And it was really funny because my professor was very supportive of my creative writing. And I conflated that with, because all of them were journalist assignments, but essentially within that, I was creative writing, which was not actually based in journalism. And so,
right, so he let you do some fiction?
There was a lot of fiction. None of it was really covering real things. So in hindsight, it really wasn't a practical journalism class. It was called journalism, and it was, for me, it ended up being a practice in creative writing. But I conflated that into thinking that maybe broadcast journalism with my passion for ESPN could be my things. And that's what brought me to Syracuse. My original major was broadcast and digital journalism. First semester of that year, there was this introductory storytelling class, COM 117. And
good memory.
There you go. taught by Tula Guenca, who ended up being a wonderful resource for me. Emotionally, during my transition from high school to college, she ended up being my faculty advisor. She ended up bookending my academic career at Syracuse because she taught Comm 117, which was my first fall semester of freshman year, and then she taught my advanced filmmaking thesis class spring of senior year. So she got to see my growth as not just a storyteller and a filmmaker, but also just as a person. I mean, it was night and day. The transition for me from high school to college was a difficult one, as it is for many people.
Yeah. I think everyone.
Yeah. 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 And so for me, in hindsight, it's actually really cool to, you know, put in perspective how much I did grow. And she was always supportive of me. I'm very thankful for her. She's actually talked about putting on a Nate Hapke Film Festival at Syracuse, and I'm like, I don't even know what that means, but sure, let's do it.
Well, based on your output.
Absolutely. I have stuff to show. You're
the view that they can do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then there's the Daytime Emmy, you know.
Is Syracuse, how big is Syracuse?
Syracuse University is a private university in upstate New York. I believe it's like 13,000 undergrads.
Right. For all 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, yeah, I'm just trying, because, you know, I went to a large UC campus, yeah. so having a personal relationship with a teacher is such a stretch when it's a, you know, 30,000.
And then, and that's the entire school, but within Syracuse there are, I think, anywhere from 9 to 11 individual schools, and I was in the right. communication school, so in my graduating class, I think there were 250 kids.
Right.
And within that, there were the TRF kids, the BDJ kids, the television, radio, film kids, the broadcast and digital journalism kids, the advertising kids, the, you know, magazine, everything.
Right. So it was a great program
yes.
for you because you could even get more mentorship from
Absolutely.
Faculty.
Absolutely. And it was actually, she was one of the people that helped instill this idea in me that I didn't need to go to film school. It was actually really wonderful.
Right, she just said, based on your undergrad, just... You did the summer programs, right? In L.A.?
I did, and I'll... I'm jumping ahead, and I apologize for that. So, I'll go back. I was in Comm 117 with her, and it was an introductory storytelling class that every single Newhouse kid had to take. And they put a camera in my hand. And I had a camera in my hand, video camera in my hand, growing up, but it was just to make, like, funny school videos, which I loved to perform in. But when I was tasked with creating, we had three assignments throughout the semester, and the final thing was a narrative fiction piece. One of them was a documentary night. I'm trying to remember what the first one, I think the first one was just, like, a scene. And it was so unique for me, because it was this way for me to bridge the gap between what I had been doing, which was writing short stories, and what I'm doing now, which is writing screenplays, and realizing that I could adapt the short stories into screenplays and then direct them and then, you know, shoot them and then show them to people and actually, you know, make the movies that I grew up loving and appreciating.
Right, because your writing had always just been personal.
Yeah, it was like personal reflection. A lot of it was stream of consciousness.
And you were a performer separate from them.
Yeah.
And you hadn't really envisioned taking your writing and putting it out there.
I hadn't even thought about that. And then I had that class. And then I, of course, as a broadcast major, had to take, you know, like the broadcast intensive class, and having to write actual journalism as opposed to the creative writing under the name of journalism. My broadcast professors did not like me at all because I could not embrace the idea of writing news copy. It was just like I had to, and it wasn't about like hyperbolizing or anything along those lines. It was just like I needed to make, for me, the real world is scary. The real world sucks. The real world is terrible. Like, it's just that there are some really nice aspects to it. There's love. There's friendship. There's that, you know, appreciation. And those are the things that help you get through. But for me, because the real world sucks and, like, having to report on, like, a stabbing and stuff like that, for me, it's like there has to be some element of, like, levity, because you just have to be able to laugh. Like, especially now in our political climate, like, you just have to have some break from reality, in my opinion, because it helps me cope with how crazy and scary the world is. And so broadcast wasn't a thing for me. And I knew how much I loved Comm 117. I made the transition to television, radio, and film. And the rest, as they say, is herstory. There was a sophomore level class that I was fortunate enough to direct the final film for. Only two films in that entire semester, and I was one of the two directors, which was very special in a class of 30 kids. And I was heavily involved in Citrus TV, which was the on-campus television station. Worked my way up from freshman year being an actor and a writer to directing the show by sophomore year. By junior year, when I returned from my semester abroad in Los Angeles, which I'll get back to, I was nominated to be the entertainment director for the entire station. So I was overseeing, at that point, the entertainment department was only one show. It was that sketch comedy show that I aforementioned. And for me, it was like, you know what? I don't want the entertainment department to be the laughing stock of Citrus anymore. So I wanted to expand it. And so very early on, even before the semester started, my term really started, I reached out to people and I said, I want original ideas for new shows. And by the end of my term, the entertainment department was three shows. I added a cooking show and I added... I say that like, you know, I did all that. There was a really passionate young woman named Abby who wanted to do a cooking show. And I worked with her to help pilot that.
Yeah. You worked as a TV executive, really. Yeah,
essentially. And getting that experience as a student was amazing.
Producer slash programmer.
Yeah. I'm always reticent to like give myself a lot of credit.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, no, there you go.
I'm trying to give you credit.
Perfect. And then the other show was this, it was pitched as a Chelsea Handler type late night comedy talk show. And the original EPs that came in were just awesome. They were passionate. They had clear vision. And it's so funny now because the current iteration of Citrus TV, that's the show that everyone wants to work on. In the entertainment department.
And that was a female host?
It was two female hosts.
Two female hosts.
Which was wonderful.
So I actually happened to notice that the cooking show and that show, both female hosts.
Yes. So which was important. It was female hosts and female executive producers. And which was just wonderful. Sophomore year, I heard about, going into Syracuse, I knew, or going to college in general, I knew that there was going to be an opportunity potentially for me to study abroad. And originally my minor was Spanish. And so I was like, I'm going to go to Spain.
Of course. My God.
Wouldn't that be great? It got to a point where I made this decision because I found out that there was another option for both my minor and studying abroad. For studying abroad, I was introduced to the idea of Syracuse University in Los Angeles, which is a very unique thing where you actually study abroad in Los Angeles. You take classes at night that all start at 6 and 7 p.m., which allows you to have full-time internships during the day, which is so unique. And it brings you out to Los Angeles, and they provide housing and all that kind of stuff. And it was a no-brainer for me. And thankfully, it's actually really funny because that semester was so formative for me in a lot of ways. I roomed with majority of the kids that were in my semester were television, radio, and film. But there were a few from the film school. Syracuse actually does have a film school. In the visual and performing arts school, they have a film program. And my three roommates were all film. And that was their major. And I actually really liked that I could room with them because
Do they have apartments or they have their own little dorm?
So
I'm just curious about the logistics.
Absolutely. I didn't know a lot of people going into the semester, and I'm a little bit shy, which is funny, you know, as a filmmaker. I love talking about my films. I don't really love talking about me with people. And so, like, I think that's one of the reasons why I love creating in general is because I can show more people, like, my thoughts and feelings in a visual space, in a visual medium, and that is what I can speak to as opposed to opening up my heart about myself in general. But anyway, the Syracuse University in Los Angeles semester, more about it, is they provide housing for you. Originally, it was at the Oakwood Apartments,
which I
think are now the Avalon Apartments.
Yeah, the ones on Barham, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why the rebranding happened, but I have some guesses.
but anyway, too many horrible things that happened.
Well, I mean, I have memories of all the child actors running around. And one morning I was getting ready to go to my internship and I was just walking through the parking lot. And there was a woman in all leather that was getting lav mic'd. And I was like, OK, perfect. I don't know what they were shooting. I don't know what they were shooting. So I can't make any further insinuations. I was uncomfortable, and so I just went to my internship. And so speaking of my internship, when I met with the program director, Andrea Asimo, she was based in Los Angeles. She's now the former director of the program. Robin Howard took over. During my semester, Robin Howard was just a professor in the program. She was a great professor. I actually loved taking her class, and now she's the head of the program. Andrea stepped down. But Andrea came to Syracuse and interviewed everybody that got into the program during my semester, and she did that every semester. She asked us what our interests were, and of course I said, filmmaking. Yeah. I want to be on set. And that was it. That's the experience that I wanted. And so she found me this internship at Silver Screen Pictures, which sounded great because they're a film production company, and predominantly they're content were Lifetime original movies, and they were heading into production on Liz and Dick, which was the Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor biopic starring Lindsay Lohan. Well, there were some production issues that happened. And of course, this was going to be an unpaid internship, but I knew summer between my freshman year and sophomore year of college, I, of course, it was like, well, no, you have to be a rising junior to have an internship. I was like, excuse me. So I went back to Fox 40 News in Binghamton, which is Binghamton is where I was. I went to high school in the suburb of Vestal. And I asked them for an internship. And I was like, I don't need money. I just want the experience. And I started out as just like a runner PA. And I ended up doing the playback on the live Sunday night news on my last night. That was summer between freshman year and sophomore year, summer between sophomore year and junior year. I had what started out as two internships in the city of Chicago. My girlfriend at the time lived in Chicago with her family. One of my internships was with Discovery Communications. In Chicago, though, unlike Silver Springs, Maryland, they don't have any production. It's advertising. But what looks great on the resume? Discovery Communications. So I got that. So I had to wear a tie 3 days a week. Hated it. But I loved the experience of working with them, and I was on a great team. They were all wonderful. On my last day, they brought me to lunch. They all wrote me amazing letters of recommendation on LinkedIn. And that experience was wonderful because it taught me that that's not where I want to be.
Right. You were like, yeah, advertising.
Yeah. But not for me. But also, it was just wonderful for me to see what these people do. Like, as a content creator, that was a very unique experience. The other internship that I had that semester, I say it started out as an internship because I was like, all right, well, if my first internship with Discovery is not going to be in production, I need to figure out something production related this summer or else I'm going to die. only part hyperbole. And I found this company. I just did a Google search in terms of production companies in the city of Chicago, and I came across Simply C Productions. And I emailed Cherie Buchanan, who was the CEO and executive producer of the company, and she initially hired me to be a PA to do random odd jobs, but at least I could say that Simply C Productions was on my resume, and I said I'll do anything. And both ended up being unpaid, and that's the whole point of it. It's you get that experience, you make the connections, and I was happy to do it. And I started out doing that, and then we got to talking. Like, she hired me to do that off of my resume, but we got to talking about what my passion was. She's like, well, what if we actually made movies this summer? And I said, I would love to do that. So what I ended up doing was transitioning into a role as director of not only one, but two feature-length documentaries that took place in Chicago. One was Simply See Comedians, which was about, I believe at the time of our final cast, it was like 9 stand-up comedians in Chicago, and just highlighting what their lives were like as they were trying to make the transition to fame and fortune, all that kind of stuff, which was really fascinating. And the other one was Simply See Teens, which was about 7 different kids from Chicago and the surrounding suburbs and boroughs. Not boroughs, but areas.
Yeah. You're giving away your East Coastness.
Yeah, there you go. from all different socioeconomic backgrounds. and to highlight what their lives are like.
Right,
and what
so Simply C was a production company.
That was the production company.
And led by someone who just was so open to new ideas and possibilities. Mm-hmm. Just let's make two documentaries in a summer.
Yeah. And we shot them. I worked 3 days a week at Discovery Communications, and I worked 4 days a week at Simply C Productions. That was my summer of 2012.
Right. So you worked 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. The summer
unpaid of, in Chicago, yeah. Running Chicago, around, and it was great
in college.
Yeah. And that was a wonderful summer. Those documentaries, I don't know if we'll ever see the light of day. I haven't spoken to Cherie in a couple of years. But the
none of the comedians made it.
So I know that some of the Simply C comedians did relocate to New York. But yeah, I mean, it's even if those documentaries never see the light of day, even that was such a wonderful experience for me because I was thrust into the spotlight as this kid who was making stuff up as he was going along. But I had ideas, but I just, like, I had no idea how to properly, like, execute them. So I was figuring it out on the fly. And I loved that experience because it gave me so much confidence.
And you were directing.
I was directing.
Were you crew also? Was it skeleton crew? Because documentary,
she hired, get away with. She hired all the crew. Cherie did. And I figured out what the questions were.
But she took a PA and said, let's direct two docs this summer.
Yeah.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and they just, a bunch of different reasons, which I won't disclose, I don't think they'll ever see the light of day, which is fine. I don't need them to, because that experience was wonderful. Anyway.
So the following summer.
L.A. Because the summer of 2012 transitioned into the fall of 2012, which is when I studied abroad in Los Angeles. I had the internship at Silver Screen Pictures. It was in film production. I was used to doing, you know, the unpaid stuff. I just wanted the experience. I wanted to be on set. I wanted to watch the director interact with the actors. I was so excited. For myriad reasons, the production fell apart. That a bunch of them weren't even disclosed to us. They just, our coordinator, it was me and one of my roommates, we're both interning for them because we're both, you know, interested in film. And the coordinator came to us one day and was like, so the movie's not happening this semester. You guys can stay on as interns. We're not going to have any work for you for the next 4 months. Yeah. So feel free to get other internships. And so Zach and I looked at each other and we were like, all right, I guess we'll go get more internships or different internships. And we sat down with Andrea Asimo, and I still remember being in her office, and she's this stack of 10 internships, and I looked through it. I don't even remember what the other 9 were, because there was one that was poking its head out, and it was Disney ABC Television Group, General Hospital. At that time, the position was called intern. Since then, it's been upgraded to office production assistant, for reasons I won't get into. And it was physical production, and There was the added bonus that because it was a Disney internship, it was paid. But at that point, it was like, I just wanted to be around production, and it just sounded interesting, and it was a name that people would recognize, like more so than Silver Screen Pictures.
Well, and on the top of your brain, was it also knowing that soap operas shoot like crazy? Like,
no.
I
didn't know what it was like. And so I just went in because I wanted to be around production. I didn't want to, I didn't want to get the agency experience. I didn't want to, because I don't like wearing a tie unless I have to go to an event. I like getting dressed up, but I don't want to do it for work. And I'm not saying that, like, General Hospital, we dress like, you know, slobs or anything like that. But I just like wearing jeans and, like, a Henley or a polo or something like that, and just making stuff. Like, that's how I am comfortable, and that's how I like to operate. And I went in to interview with Nikki Goldwasser, who was the production coordinator at the time, the next day. And she hired me on the spot. And the only reason why Andrea had that job description on her desk is because General Hospital typically carries 4 interns, because it's not a full-time position. So it's, you split up. There's always 2 per day, and you split it up over the week. They lost one. And so they were sending out this notice to anybody that could help, you know, fill in. And they lost one for some reason, and it was there for me. And I went in and I interviewed, and they like hired
they lost
me the next
them the day.
Day
before, and then they
Something
sent out
like
the piece
that.
Of paper, and
yeah,
and that was the day that you needed an internship.
Yeah. And it's like I from a very young age, I've been a firm believer in everything happens for a reason. And when I look back on my life thus far, it just seems that way. That like, but at the same time, I'm very sensitive about the idea of people calling me lucky, because I like to think that I make my own luck in terms of how I walk into a room and I present myself, in terms of how I interview, in terms of how I conduct myself.
No, I mean,
there
was good fortune involved in the timing.
Yeah.
But the results are yours.
Yeah. That's something that I will give myself credit for, but try not to do in a way that makes me seem like, you know, I'm too proud.
Well, but Lord knows there's a lot of people. I'm sure there's a list of there's a long list of names per year of people who show up on the general hospital to either interview for an internship or they start an internship and they don't last.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
There's a huge churn.
And I've been able to see it. I'm in a unique position where I interact with the now OPAs on a daily basis. And it's really funny because it's like the producers, if they know your name, typically it's because you're really bad. And so their typical interns are the ones that, it's very unique when they know your name because you're really good. And thankfully they knew my name because I was really good. And they invited me back for the summer of 2013. So I was there, my first intern for them during the fall semester of my junior year. And I did the abroad program. There's a bunch of different schools of thought for making that decision about when to do it. You can either do it, it just has to be done during your junior year or your senior year. A lot of people, they do it during the spring of their senior year because if their internship is great and they can just transition into their post-grad life without having to go back to school and then come back. For me, I wanted to go as early as possible because I had no idea what LA was like. And I wanted to be able to learn what LA was like and then have time to go back to school and work on me so that I was ready for LA. Because I didn't, I just knew, because I have always been very self-aware since I was a kid, that I knew what my limitations were and I knew what, you know, potential limitations were. And I knew that I'm a hands-on learner, but at the same time, if I can protect myself and take care of myself and prepare myself, I'm much more of an asset to myself and to other people. Okay. So that was part of my decision-making, going as early as I could. I went back to, I had the great semester with GH, and then they invited me back for the summer of 2013.
Right, so you went back to Syracuse
for the
second
spring.
Semester.
Yeah, the spring semester. Of my junior year.
And then you already knew you were going back to LA for that internship.
Yeah, I during the end of my fall semester here in LA, during the SULA semester, I interviewed for the entertainment director position at Citrus TV so that beginning of spring, back on campus, I could start that position. So where I oversaw the piloting of two new shows for the entertainment department, tripling it, which is my legacy there. And I knew that I needed to focus on me senior year. And what I meant by that is not only in terms of my own personal growth, but it was my personal growth as a filmmaker. I knew that I needed to move out here with a sense of momentum. I needed to move out here with a sense of who I was as a storyteller. And so, the filmmaking track through the television, radio, film department allows you to take, there's your thesis, which is in the spring, and there is your pre-thesis, which is in the fall. And I knew that I had the sense about myself that I wanted to direct. And so I was like, I need to direct in the fall and I need to direct in the spring. And so because I wanted both of those things. And it was really interesting for me because during the fall semester, during SULA, when I was out here, as I had previously mentioned, my three roommates were all film majors at Syracuse, and I was TRF in the communications school, and so there was like this, you know, monkey on my back, and I was always like the butt of some jokes, and I wasn't taken as seriously by the other guys, and whatever else. It was a really good teachable moment for me, but there was a certain point during the semester where one of my roommates was like, dude, you got to go to film school. Like, you really do. Like, if you want to be a filmmaker, and I know you do, you need to go to film school. And so I convinced myself I needed to go to film school. So when I got back to campus...
For graduate or...
For
whenever
I did it.
Or to change majors when you got back.
whenever I did it, just as long as I did it. So part of the conversation that I did was I went back and I spoke to Luguenka, the professor that I mentioned earlier. And this is where it came up, because I met with her, and then I also met with Michael Schoonmaker, the head of the TRF department at Syracuse. And I met with them separately, because I just wanted to have them not feed off of each other and get their, you know, unique takes on it. And actually, both of them, I met with her first, and then I met with him. Both of them said, you don't need to go to film school. You just need to make things. And keep making things. And
did they know you directed those documentaries and whatnot?
Yeah.
They knew.
Yeah. But they had also seen, you know, they had seen my final project in COM 117. They had seen my final project in TRF 205. Yeah. They knew how
I talked about myself. They knew you pretty much had gone to film school anyway. Yeah.
And that was what I wanted to do. You know, it's like they knew that, and they knew that I was directing at Syracuse After Hours. They knew that I was acting and writing at Citrus TV. They knew that I was writing, directing, acting, producing, my own sketch comedy group, Ethnically Challenged, which we had so much fun. We started out as an acoustic cover band, and we transitioned into comedic short filmmakers that led all the way into our junior year. And it was actually like really wonderful serialized content that just became like hyper meta by the end of it, because we were so self-referential by the end of it, which was wonderful. It was a bunch of, we made it for us. It was just a bunch of like inside jokes, and it's stuff that if you had been watching our videos from the beginning, you would get by the end. But if you weren't doing that, the videos we were releasing at the end, you're like, what the hell is this? But we had so much fun making those. And so my professors knew that I was just making stuff, and they just said, keep making stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's why I was like, okay, maybe I don't need to do that. Maybe I just need to focus on me and my films senior year and get ready for that transition to LA and not worry about the film school. Heading into now the spring of my senior year, so it's my last semester, yeah. I need to go out with a bang. Before I get into the class, there was a inaugural Syracuse University Film Festival. And this was the final nail in the coffin of, does Nate need to go to film school? Because we entered SHAVE, which was a no-brainer. It was free for students. And it was only Syracuse University students. You didn't have to be in VPA film. You didn't have to be in Newhouse. You just had to be a Syracuse University student. And we submitted SHAVE. And the awards came out. Best short film, SHAVE. And runner-up, second place and third place were the only three that they named. Second place and third place were both VPA films. Number one was a TRF film. And I was like, it can be a sign or it can be nothing. And I chose to read it as a sign. I watch a lot of movies. I try to watch at least 150 a year. My new threshold to get to is 200. So I watch everything. And I don't just stick to, this is a quick aside, I don't just stick to any certain genre. I like to watch everything. And I like, because everything, I can learn from everything, whether it's subjectively bad or subjectively good. And I try not to, and this is something that I got from my mother very early on. It was when I would watch things growing up and I would, you know, say that it was good. She asked me why. And we'd have the conversation about that. And it was amazing because it created this idea of appreciating art could also be discourse on art. And that there's so much intrinsic value in that. And to not dismiss something by just applying a label to it. And realizing that there's so much of film consumption that is purely, it is purely subjective, because we're all humans and we're all fallible and we're all imperfect and we all have our own opinions, and it is, they're just opinions. And ultimately, you know, operating in this space, you know, we live in a capitalistic society, and so there's this like pressure on it, on your art, to create money. And how do you create money? You connect with people on a grander scale. So ultimately, you know, the hope is that people do connect with this stuff and want to pay for it, but at the same time, it's like, the commodification of it, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good, you know? And so it's like, it's in it. And, but it's something that I had to like come to. And that's actually what I was talking about earlier with Slate. It was the first movie where I knew what it was when I watched the final cut of it with the score and with the color and at 4K. And like, I just knew what the movie was. And there was nothing that my mother, that my girlfriend, that my father, that my siblings could say to me, or anybody, Joe Schmo on the street, could say to me with their opinion that could take away the value of that piece of art from me. And that was the first time that had ever happened for me. And that was, you know, my ninth short film, that it took me that long to get to that point where I was like, I don't need other people's opinions for me to be able to have value in the art that I create. And that was a wonderful transformation for me as an artist. You know, for a long time, it was actually hard for me to call myself an artist, because it was like, what does that mean? You know, what is it? And is it pretentious to call yourself an artist?
Particularly in filmmaking.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that's, and I've had the unique ability to create things that there wasn't this intrinsic pressure on it to make money. So they weren't immediately commodified. It was like, I can just put my own personal thoughts and feelings and expressions and frame these narratives the way that I want to frame them and not worry about appeasing studio executives or anything along those lines. I get final cut, I get final say, and I can just put them out there. And thankfully, for the most part, they've been well received. And in that way, I think, you know, I'm at least a storyteller. I'm a filmmaker. I don't know. I think I'm an artist. There's this wonderful Andy Warhol quote that I'm probably going to butcher right now, but I'll try to get the basis of it. It's like, just make art. And while everyone else is figuring out whether it's good or bad, make more art. And I love that so much. And I think I discovered that shortly before or after I came to that realization about Slate and what it was. And it was so nice because it was validation of that idea of not needing my art to be good or bad. It just could be my art. And it was just really, really, really unique. I got into this Creative Mind group program at the Toronto International Film Festival, the Filmmaker Institute there, ended up directing a no-budget movie while I was there in competition, through the Creative Mind group. I won Best Director. I also acted in it. And my editor won Best Editor.
Was that one of those, like, make a film in a weekend kind of deals?
Kind of. It was make a film in 4 or 5 days. They gave us the camera. They gave us the sound equipment.
Yeah.
And we had no budget.
Those are cool programs.
They're wonderful.
The 48-hour film.
Yeah. And so this one was unique because it was at Toronto. It was actually during TIFF. And so they gave us festival accreditation, and we could go to screenings. Which was really wonderful.
It's one of the most prestigious festivals in North America.
And then it turned into, I did the same thing at Cannes in the spring of 2015. Tom and Jerry ended up getting into the short film corner of Cannes. That was the first time that I ever went. And I got into the Filmmaker Institute once again through the Creative Mind group, but this time in Cannes. I wrote for that project. That was Ashes that I made there. That one ended up winning Best Screenplay for me and Best Director for Temi Tokosi, who's a wonderful director. He's based in New York now. And we didn't win Best Short, but it was all good. It was a really good movie. Meanwhile, I was promoted at General Hospital from temp to production coordinator, which was, you know, more pay and a higher title. And now the interns were reporting to me directly, which was very strange. One of the interns that came around was Sophia Zack, who went to CSUN, California State University of Northridge, for those listening. And she studied film producing. And she was just this really, you know, quick-talking, confident young woman who just was passionate about film producing. And we just got to talking about like what she was doing in her free time. She was producing a feature at the time, and she had produced a bunch of shorts and or AD'd on them. And I just turned to her and I was like, because I was looking for a new producer after the experience of Zadie, and I said, would you like to collaborate? And she said, I would love to collaborate. Especially because, you know, I was able to tell her, like, you know, Zadie were finishing up now, and Tom and Jerry was just in the short film corner of Cannes. And she was like, oh, that sounds great, whatever else.
Yeah. You're not a guy sitting around going, I'd kind of like to make a film. You want to collaborate? You're really doing it.
Yeah. And she connected with that, and she wanted to be a part of it. And our first collaboration was Brunch. We made that in 2016. That was my first collaboration with Sophia Zack. It's amazing because the CSUN program sounded even more hands-on than the Syracuse program. And she had this really close-knit group of people that she had collaborated with that were, like, very focused. So she brought Jeff Vanderpool, who owns his own Arri Alexa and was a is a phenomenal director of photography. And she brought in Zachary Friedman, who on Brunch was just the UPM, but has turned into who has a passion for production design and has since done production design for now three projects of mine. And just other collaborators from school and that. So she's brought in people, I've brought in people, and we finally have this team now that we've made four shorts together.
Right. Because she went to school here, too.
She did.
This is her home base.
Yeah.
No, so you have, that's such a great thing.
Oh, it's wonderful. And she also knows the area more, and she has, because she's into, you know, producing and stuff like that, and because she's had to produce here in L.A. before, she understands Film L.A. She understands getting a permit in Burbank versus getting a permit in L.A. County. She understands all of those types of things and the logistics that, like, I try to understand, but I'd rather not have to, you know?
Yeah.
Like I'm always fascinated to learn from her, and always curious about that, but having to not have that be my priority has been so nice for me. We finished up with Brunch. It ended up having a phenomenal festival run. It ended up getting into the Short Film Corner that ended with a spot in the Short Film Corner of Cannes in 2017. And while Brunch was out to festivals, I turned to Sophia and I was like, heading into production of my eighth short film. Brunch is done. It's out to festivals. That was a really great experience working with you. Not only are you a great producer, but she also served as the first AD on set, because that's where a lot of her experience is. And she was wonderful. She runs a set like an independent film set like I've never seen before. Maybe I'm just ignorant, but I actually think she's quite wonderful and just so efficient. And she has a good sense of humor, and so she tries to keep things light as well as efficient. So I really appreciated that, and I was like, we need to work on our next thing, because our Brunch is out there, but let's get the next thing going. It was my eighth short film, and so for me, eight is my lucky number. And that's how we get to one more. Because my experience of moving day to college was so hard for me, because it was the admitting the fact that I was moving on in my life and I wasn't gonna be able to see my mother every day and be able to hug her every day. And I realized that, especially in hindsight, how that moment for both of us was a transition of not being able to see each other, and that it was difficult for both of us, and that it wasn't just about me, it was also about her. And so I figured out this dual narrative for both a mother and her child. Equal screen time for both. They each, you know, occupied a third of the screen. And then once they sort of satisfied what they were each looking for, they transitioned into the other third and were able to actually exit properly off screen. As opposed to prior to that, they're always walking towards the middle of the screen, towards each other, but now they're able to walk away from each other. So visually as a director, that was the first time where I really thought about how blocking and movement could also tell a story just within the frame, in addition to the actual writing itself. So we finished up one more, and then we got that out to festivals. Had the honor of ending up at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. That was one of our three screenings in LA, and that was unique, because not only was it my eighth film, not only was it my most personal to date, it was the first time that any of my stuff had ever screened in LA.
Oh yeah.
And then that was like that was another step.
But was that because you hadn't been submitting as much in LA?
No, I had. I hadn't gotten any bites yet.
Oh.
And so that's it. It was really nice that happened. And it happened with such a personal film for me. It was also very special. From one more, we then went on to Slate, which is now out to festivals, having its festival debut next weekend in Detroit. Like I said earlier, it's my fifth year in a row. Still going back. Seven films there in 5 years, four awards. And then we just shot She and Her, which is in post. Because it's always nice. There was somebody that told me during SULA, he said, if you're a filmmaker, always have one in post, one in production, two in pre-production. And I took that to heart. And I've made two to three short films a year, whether it's actually producing them or developing them, for the last 4 years. And I now have 10... I now have 11 short films on IMDb. And we're heading into production on Fallible in January, starring Dominic Zampronia and Danielle Rain from One More. And my friend Julie Romano as the daughter. And I'm excited.
And that's Nate Hapke. I'm kind of proud to say that I have 2.5 hours of Nate really going into detail into all of his work, And you know what? I'm just going to mothball it. And when the day comes that he's a big shot and like he's got Oscars on the way, I'll be able to whip out the 2.5 hour interview of him when he was in his 20s. And it'll be kind of cool. Don't you think? All right. So on to business. If you go to discoverindiefilm.com, besides finding this podcast and lots of other great podcasts, there's great films, including One More. It'll either be embedded there or you can get a link to watch One More. But as I said, at discoverindiefilm.com, there's tons of great short films that you can watch and links to great feature films you can watch. All these filmmakers are people I meet at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival and Film Invasion LA. Sherman Oaks Film Festival is every November. This year is November 7th, 8th, and 9th. And Film Invasion LA is every June. I'll be letting you know when we have dates for that. And I think that's all I got to say. Thanks for listening.